Hey, everybody, welcome into episode number 102 of Toe in the Slab Pitching with David Cone. It is weekly pitching chatter with the five-time World Series champ, the former Cy Young Award winner, David Cone. We have the ace of research, James Smythe, myself, Justin Shackle, our wonderful producer, Dan Work, with us as well. A lot to tackle this week with some pitchers, guys, finding some big-time success with their new teams a couple of weeks after the trade deadline, a couple of weeks after being dealt. But look, last week, let's start it off here. We released a new episode, and then I think that night or the next day, Michael Lorenzen throws a no-hitter for the Phillies in the white vans, no less. So obviously, I wanted to ask you, the guys, the most important question here. I need to know, have either of you rocked vans at one point?
Yes, I have, with my son. My son is 11 years old, and he wanted a pair of Vans, so I bought matching pairs with him over the last year, actually. So my first pair of Vans at 60 years old.
Nice. Which ones did you get?
They were the basic black. He wanted black.
Okay.
You know, with the white trimming.
Gotcha.
I don't think I've ever had Vans, but I do respect it, and I love the look on Lorenzen. And it's brought some no hitter luck too now.
I love it. I love that Vans are now in Cooperstown. I've been a big Vans supporter since my high school days. I had the white and black checkered ones, the Spicoli styled Vans. I still have Vans in my closet right now that I wear occasionally. So that was a big night for me. Seeing Michael Lorenzen throw a no hitter in the cleated Vans, really cool moment there for him. And he is one of several pitchers finding a lot of success to start with their new teams a couple of weeks after the trade deadline. We're going to touch on that. We're going to talk about certain wildcard contenders, teams on the periphery of wildcard contention, of being in one of those three spots, whether or not they have the potential to make a big run down the stretch here. Obviously, we'll touch in on the Yankees and some of the, I guess, the vaunted offenses of the National League from a pitcher's perspective, who you would want to face the least. But let's stay on this topic, guys. Pitchers that are finding a lot of success to start in their new homes. That leads us into the opener this week, David. What do you have for us?
Well, I can speak from experience, the hired gun, right? It is a big deal. It's not just about performance on the field. And we've seen some of these hired guns have immediate success, whether it's Michael Lorenzen, as you referenced, in his no-hitter and a historic night, or Max Scherzer, or even Justin Verlander. You know, when I was in that position, I walked into the Toronto Blue Jays clubhouse, and the players in the clubhouse had cone heads on, and just to welcome me. And then the fans as well really got into it. The media got into it, and it puts a lot of pressure on you as the hired gun to come in and succeed. But there's a psychological impact on the entire fan base and the clubhouse. The players themselves filters down through the fan base, and it is a huge lift. It's hard to put a number on that, what that really means psychologically to a team. But when you come in and have immediate success like that, it just makes the whole, it kind of rises up the level of anticipation of the whole organization, gives you hope. Hope is a strong thing. And these hired guns have provided hope for each fan base that they've gone to, especially with the immediate success that they've had.
Lorenzen with the no hitter. Lance Lynn has been terrific, a 2 ERA in 3 starts. Max Scherzer, he had that rocky first inning as a Ranger in his Texas debut, but he grinded through for a quality start there. And then since then, 7 innings, 1 run. And then in his last start on Monday against the Angels, 7 shutout innings, 1 hit, 11 Ks. That's vintage Max.
I'm wondering about the type of different energy levels, David, that you're talking about. You go to Toronto that time here this season in 2023, the Phillies with Lorenzen, they're not in first place per se. They're in the first wild card position, but having a team like the Rangers, a first base place ball club, the Dodgers comfortably now in first place with Lynn. When you are a first place team, things are already going right. And then your team makes these deals. That player walks in the clubhouse as a first place ball club. What does that do for that squad?
Well, that just shows you that the organization has confidence that you're gonna contend for a title. And the expectation levels just got raised up a notch that, yes, we're in first place. Yes, maybe we would have won the division or had success without these moves. But the fact that the moves were made tells us that they have confidence in us, that this is the year right here, right now. And that message is strong in major league clubhouses, and teams hear it. And it takes, you know, a lot of times too, when you bring in a high profile pitcher, a hired gun, so to speak, it takes pressure off the rest of the rotation. And I remember in 95, when I was traded to the Yankees, Jack McGowell was struggling, and he was coming off the heels of Jack the Flipper, where he flipped off the Yankee Stadium crowd, and he had shaved his head. You know, he was going through a rough time, you know, and Blackjack was a great guy. But then when I came in, I had a couple of good starts and pitched well late in the games. And he said he learned by osmosis. It's almost like something clicked in for him that, oh, that's how you do it. This is how you pitch, you know, third time through the order. This is how you get deeper in the games. And this is what's expected of me. And he picked up his pace from that point on. And he credited just watching me pitch, or the fact that I was the hired gun brought in, that kind of inspired him. But you never know when you're going to have that click, that kind of a residual effect that impacts everybody on the roster, including everybody else in that rotation. So, James, to your point, Lance Lynn's taking pressure off of, you know, whether it's Julio or Urias or whoever else is in that Dodger rotation. The same thing goes in Philly. The same thing goes in Texas, as Max Scherzer takes Jacob DeGrom's place. Really, you know, the guy that was, you know, that was supposed to lead them is out, obviously, with an injury, and Tommy John. But, you know, that's what happens. The residual effect on down the road there, or down the way, impacts everybody else on the roster.
So you have Max Scherzer in Texas, Michael Lorenzen in Philly, Lance Lynn with the Dodgers, obviously Justin Verlander settling in with the Astros as well, a place he's comfortable with. His previous home, he may have not been so comfy. And there are reports coming out that the New York Post, Mike Puma, a great beat writer for the New York Post, covering the Mets for a long time, he had a really in-depth story about, hey, why did everything that transpired, why did it happen? What led to it there? And it seems like there was some friction between Verlander and the Mets, so much so that Verlander had to put out a statement, because in the report, it basically said that Verlander was coming out basically and suggesting that the Mets needed to step their analytical game up because it wasn't on par with other teams that he'd been with, obviously like the Astros. And the word diva is being thrown around with Justin Verlander among some unnamed Mets. So Verlander feels compelled to come out, make a statement there. Overall, I know, David, you were doing Sunday Night Baseball at Citi Field. It was the Mets and the Braves. I'm sure that report was topic number one around that Mets team. Pretty intriguing when you have two potential future Hall of Famers with that friction in that report. Scherzer, Verlander, what do you make of all that?
Well, I talked to Buck Showalter about it, and he downplayed it. And certainly, you know, that's to be expected. But they're very different personalities. Max Scherzer is more of a salt of the earth guy, more emotional. Justin Verlander, more calculated, definitely a different personality. But I think some of those things get overblown, especially when you start putting unnamed sources to newspaper articles. To me, and it's part of the game. I get it. I probably did it too back in the day. Hey, I can tell you this on background, or I can't put my name to this, but I'll give you a little tidbit here just to kind of give you flavor. But so those stories tend to get legs, and they tend to grow past the point of what's really happening in that clubhouse. And I don't think the biggest problem that they had with Justin Verlander is that he was hurt early in the year. They needed him from day one. And Max Scherzer obviously had his issues too in terms of performance early on. So that was the issue. It wasn't personality clashes or a diva or, you know, trashing the organization. And if Justin Verlander makes a suggestion to the Mets analytics department about constructive criticism or things we can do better, that's a good. I want that. I want Justin Verlander sharing his knowledge with an analytics team that's being ramped up and built up in Citi Field with a new owner. They're still getting it going there, still figuring it out. And Max Scherzer's Max Scherzer. Buck Showalter loves Max Scherzer. He told me that he sat down with Max when the decision came for Max to waive his no trade clause and acted like a father figure to Max and talked to him straight from the heart about what was best for him. So, you know, I can tell you this, a Buck Showalter loved both of them. They had to pivot on a dime. And when things like that happen, historically speaking, two Hall of Fame pitchers get traded together almost or simultaneously, that these kind of stories are going to come up. And it's fertile for these kind of anonymous sources and these kind of juicy stories to come up that kind of gain a life of their own that probably are a little above and beyond what really happened in that clubhouse.
It's chum for the Sharks, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Two great pitchers. You know, the biggest problem they had was that they weren't in tandem from day one, healthy and pitching like they can, pitching like they're pitching right now. If they would have pitched like they right now at the beginning of the season with the Mets, it might have been a different story.
I think for Verlander here, obviously joining or rejoining a title contender, Scherzer joining a title contender. We'll go back to Lance Lynn here, joining a title contender with the Dodgers. And it kind of intertwines here, like the Dodgers analytical team, the Astros analytical team. Man, if I'm on another team, having spent time with clubs like Houston and LA, don't you think you would want to know what those two superpowers are actually doing? Like, if you could lift the curtain back a little bit, give some insight there, I wouldn't take it as an insult. Like you said, constructive criticism. It's all productive. More Toe on the Slab is coming up, but for all our players out there, I need to tell you about a new product from our friends at Launchpad. Launchpad is a reinvented baseball thumb guard designed for fit, feel, and performance. If you're watching our YouTube stream, I have one right here. Check it out. Nice and small, compact. The coolest thing is it's glove-like, essentially, because unlike other thumb guards, Launchpad is asymmetrical and it's hand specific. It's like your glove or your shoe. It has the best possible fit because it has left-handed and right-handed models. It creates stability in your grip. It protects your hands. It optimizes performance. And as a result, you are going to be able to make more direct connection with your bat to eliminate any of that slack in your swing. And it's going to eliminate any of that shock from that pitch that misses your barrel. So ultimately, when you fire your hands, your bat will launch immediately with maximum acceleration and force. Check out launchpadthumbguard.com. That's launchpadthumbguard.com to learn more and try one out for yourself. Let's spend a little time on Lance Lynn because we just mentioned him. We'll go out of order here with the rundown a bit. What is Lance Lynn doing exactly to make a difference for this Dodgers rotation? Because I think we all agreed at the time of the deal, he was looked at as a stabilizer for the rotation, but now he's an impact pitcher again.
Yeah, this is where the pitching game is so far ahead of the hitter's game in terms of coaching and development. You make a trade for a pitcher and you immediately can make an impact by showing him your data. Throw this pitch more. Let's have a side session. Let's tweak your grip a little bit. Here's what our team sees. Here's the identification of what you should be doing, what you're not doing, what you do really well that you should use more. And that is immediate feedback that has immediate results. And we've seen that across the board over the last several years from several teams. We saw it with the Yankees and Clay Holmes, throw your sinker more. Or Gerrit Cole when he went to Houston from Pittsburgh originally. Hey, your two-seamer's not good. It's not a good pitch. You probably should throw a four-seamer more. You know, those sorts of things are happening on a daily basis in major league clubhouses by pitching coordinators, pitching coaches, analytics departments, the identification of what you should be doing, and it's paying off dividends right now because you can take it right out to a game and start doing that. With Lance Lynn, throw your curveball more. Throw your four-seamer more and your curveball more, and let's not throw that cutter or that slider as much. These are the two best pitches we've identified for you to use, especially to left-handed batters. And he had immediate success within his first two starts. So the proof is in the pudding.
You know, a lot of criticism of analytics is that it complicates things, but a lot of times it simplifies things. Like in this case, becoming more of a fastball curve two-pitch pitcher, especially the four-seamer. We know Lance Lynn for a long time, the old number one. Here it is, hit it. He pounds the zone. You know a fastball is coming. He's gotten more like that with the Dodgers. So his fastball usage by month this year, he's been in the 30%, 40% range. Up with the Dodgers in these first three starts, it's at 55% fastball usage. Batters are hitting 147 with a 33% strikeout rate against it. It is like the Lance Lynn of old. And maybe it is just a matter of a change of scenery, getting out of Chicago, getting into L.A., parachuting onto a good team in a good situation, and a little bit of a refining for a veteran pitcher, say, hey, let's get back to basics.
all part of a reason why the Dodgers, at the time we're recording this, they've won 8 in a row at a time where a lot of the teams that were sort of breathing on their neck in the rearview mirror, the Giants, the D-backs especially, they've fallen a bit on tough times. The Giants have struggled here. The D-backs have struggled mightily. And you look up at the standings and boom, the Dodgers have a 9-game lead in the NL West like they usually do. So Lance Lynn, part of that for sure. A big run there for the Dodgers. Let's focus on some big runs that could or could not happen for some of these wildcard teams. We saw the Mariners reel off 8 straight wins to put themselves back in the wildcard race. Now they have lost 3 in a row after that 8-game winning streak. But the fact is, reeling off 8 straight games where you're in the win column has put them right in the middle of the hunt for that third and final wild card. They were behind several teams. Now they're in front of those teams. So the Mariners have had their run here. Maybe they have another one. I know we're all bullish on their pitching staff. I want to know, though, which other team in the wild card hunt, guys, and you could pick one AL team, one NL team, which team has a similar run in them before it's all said and done?
Well, you know, I agree with the Mariners. The Mariners are sustainable because of their pitching. You know, we've been all over it all year long, you know, and they've been waiting for them to get going. They just needed a little bit of offense to support that pitching, but night in and night out, this time of year, any time of year, but more importantly, this time of year, pitching rules the day. I know we're biased here. It's going with the slab. I know we all love pitching. And
you're damn right we're biased.
Yeah, but it is what it is. Seattle has the best pitching. That's sustainable. I'm a buyer on Seattle. Yeah, you know, I would throw a little love Boston's way if Chris Sale is going to be anything at all going down the stretch here. And some of the other pitching that they put together has thrown the ball pretty well, better than you think. I mean, Nick Pivetta has been reborn in the bullpen sort of as a hybrid guy, can give you multiple innings and piggyback guy or whatnot. So, you know, watch out for Boston a little bit too, I think, just because I have such respect for Chris Sale. But, you know, when you're looking up and down and you see the teams that are struggling, including the Yankees, it's the decimation of the rotation that kills them. And that's what we're seeing with the Yankees right now. And if you look up and down teams that are struggling, it's because they've had injuries to starting pitching. And starting pitching is hard to find and hard to develop. Clark Schmidt, probably, you know, the only guy the Yankees have really developed as a starting pitcher. And, you know, that is something that needs to change moving forward, the development of starting pitching in your minor league systems.
You know, Boston's been a pleasant surprise this year. And the one thing I'll, you know, be a little skeptical about is their schedule coming up. So starting this weekend at Yankees, at Astros, home for the Dodgers and Astros, quite a little swing there with Houston and LA. You play the Royals, but then boom, Rays, Orioles, Yankees, Blue Jays, Rangers, well into September. So that is a tough closing stretch. The Blue Jays are a team that for the last year or two, it's been, when are they going to make their move? When are they going to make their move? Well, maybe it's going to be in the late part of August into September, because next week you have a tough series in Baltimore, but then Guardians, Nationals, Rockies, A's, Royals. That's a good 15-game stretch where you can kind of make some hay in this wild card race. And as far as the National League goes, I'm still on the Padres bandwagon. I keep waiting for them to go on a run. And right when they get to 3 or 4 games out, nobody's running away in the National League wild card race. Right when they get to 3 or 4 games out, they lose 3 in a row. And then they win a few and then they lose. And I feel like I'm just going to be sitting here like on September 19th going, well, you know, the Padres are only 4 games out with 11 to play. When are they going to make their move?
Yeah, it's a great, great point. And along the pitching lines, just to throw in on the back end here quickly, Miami. Marlins pitching. So Seattle and Miami are the two best starting rotation pitching staffs out there. So I'm buying on those two pitching staffs, those two teams.
Yeah, I wish I could be different, but I think like James, Toronto, I think we've all said at one point or another, we're waiting for them to go on a big sustained run. I mean, the schedule is right there in front of them. They're facing a bunch of last place teams all in a row too coming up. This is a tough week for them. They have the Phillies, and then they visit the Reds and the Orioles. But then after that, like you mentioned, some of the teams that they're going to be facing, the Rockies, the A's, the Royals, I think they could possibly look, if they play to their ability, they may not be the third wildcard team after that stretch. They might be in the first or second wildcard position and potentially breathing down the neck of whoever is at the top of the AL East at that point. If they take advantage of that schedule, I think the Blue Jays could be in a better position in terms of the wildcard, not just thinking about that final playoff spot. But I'm with you, David. You look at these teams who are in the wildcard race, who has the best starting three at the top of the rotation? It is Seattle. It is Castillo, Kirby, and Gilbert. I think the Mariners could have another big run in them like this and fortify their positioning. So it's a toss-up for me between Toronto and Seattle getting another big run before it's all said and done. And I'm with you on the Marlins here. I think they might be at the start of this big run here. They get a huge lift from Sandy Alcantara on the mound on Saturday. They rally back with that ninth inning collapse by the Yankees on Sunday. Then they keep it going in the first game against the Astros. So yeah, why not Miami here in the National League?
Yeah, Sandy's back. Mm-hmm. After a struggled start, the Cy Young Award winner's back. And he looked, not just because it was the Yankees and, you know, he had such a great game, but that's been coming on for a while for Sandy. His stuff is back. His confidence is back.
Let's dive into that really quick. What has made Sandy, you talk about his stuff being back, what has made him return to this type of dominant form?
I really believe that he has gotten his changeup going. I think a lot of his struggles earlier in the year were sliders that he'd leave in the middle of the plate quite a bit. Sandy ramped up early this year in the WBC. He was throwing the ball 100 miles an hour in the middle of March, way sooner than anybody would recommend for any pitcher, especially a power pitcher. So I don't know what impact that had on him, but I know emotionally and physically he expended a lot before the season even started because of the WBC. But I think that impacted his slider more than anything. But what I saw with the Yankees was an improved slider, but also an increased usage of his changeup, especially when he had the platoon advantage. If I'm facing a right-handed batter as a right-handed pitcher, throwing that changeup down and in is an equalizer. I mean, there's not a lot of margin for error if you miss with it because it speeds up the bat and it's a home run pitch or a pitch that could really be barreled up easily. But it's also on the other end really effective if you get it in good spots and good locations. And Sandy was throwing one after another down and into right-handed batters, especially Aaron Judge, and then setting up that slider rather than the converse of throwing sliders and then an occasional changeup. He was using that changeup to set up his slider. I think that's a game changer for Sandy.
Well, the changeup is the pitch that Sandy credits the most for his Cy Young season last year. And he mixes his four pitches as well as anybody in baseball. His pitches all range in the low 20s to the high 20s as far as percentage. So it's not exactly 25, 25, 25, 25, but it's pretty darn close. And is it a matter also of just water finding its level? Sandy Alcantara is too good of a pitcher to be carrying a 5 ERA into July. And he really turned the corner. It was 4.82 through June. But now in 8 starts since the beginning of July, he has a 2.75 ERA, and that's more like the Sandy we all know and love.
So I think just by glancing at the schedule, I'm pretty sure his next start's going to be coming up against the Dodgers. I think Miami, really quick. Let's double check that really quick. Yes. It's a good weekend slate, gentlemen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he should go probably Friday, since they're off Thursday. Probably Friday night, Dodger Stadium.
Okay. So that's as good of a test as any. David, I'm curious here, from a pitcher's perspective, which National League behemoth at the moment would you least want to face? Is it the Braves or is it the Dodgers?
Well, I think the Braves have a deeper lineup. You know, the Dodgers are very top heavy with two MVP candidates at the top of their order. And I've talked about this quite a bit in covering the Dodgers. You know, it's relentless. It's a modern day approach to lineup construction, and I love it. From a pitching standpoint, it's like from the first pitch of the game, oh my, it's Mookie Betts. Can't make a mistake. He's going to lose it. It's 1-0. And then Freddie's right behind him. And, you know, they certainly have other pieces that follow them up, but those are two MVP, MVP A and MVP B right behind each other. And every time the lineup rolls over, here they come again. They get the most at bats. They come up late in games in big spots. They're the first two batters to bat the third time through the order, the fourth time through the order. I think that's a big deal. Puts a lot of pressure on pitching. But I still say the Braves right now are rolling, are hitting probably on all cylinders in terms of a 1-9 lineup. Although Ozzie Albies is a little bit of a blow to them, you know, going on the IL with a hamstring strain. But they've got Nicky Lopez to step right in, and the perfect guy in the perfect spot, who's just lighting it up right now in his first few games as a member of the Braves and loving life. Been rescued from Kansas City, thrown right in the middle of the Braves, working out with Ron Washington before every game. He's learning things he's never heard before. You talk about a guy who is Johnny on the spot. That's Nicky Lopez right now.
Well, you mentioned the loss of Albies, and it's the good thing when you're running away with your division, because your next meaningful game isn't really for another 7 weeks. So that's plenty of time for Ozzie to get all nice and healed up. But as far as the newer lineup construction, I don't know, I guess it is newer, but it's been going for, you know, 5, 10 plus years now, where you get these guys who can do damage right away. If you look at the list of leadoff home run leaders all time, and it's George Springer and Mookie Betts is rocketing up the list. Ronald Acuna Jr. These are the kinds of bats that are right there. And also the more sabermetric thinking in the last 15 years or so, bat your best hitter second, because he'll get more at bats and he's still going to get RBI opportunities like the number 3 and 4 hitters. Shohei Ohtani bat second. Aaron Judge bat second. When Mike Trout was in his prime winning MVPs, he was batting second. Joey Votto hit second. So you, Cone, you mentioned the lineup turning over. Well, how often do we see late in a game where a big spot is coming up and, oh, it's the leadoff man, it's the two hitter, it's the three hitter. Those guys are coming up earlier, and you say, well, if we had the old way, we'd have a speedster or a Punch and Judy guy batting, where my big bat that I really want up is in the on deck circle. But now that guy's coming up to the plate.
Yeah, the Braves lineup, it is suffocating for a pitcher. It just finds ways to wrap its coils around you and squeeze the life out of a pitcher. That's what I think makes it the best offense in baseball right now. It's grinding, it's grueling, and Aaron Boone called it rugged, manager of the Yankees, after their loss to the Braves on Monday. That said, the Dodgers, it seems like, find ways to just put together game-changing swings and certain sequences. So pick your poison there. I'd go with the Braves. Excuse me. I'd go with the Braves at this point, because 1-9 is just such a well-oiled machine here. So the Braves are currently playing the Yankees. They welcome in the Giants this weekend. Leads me to my next question, gentlemen. Which weekend series do you think is going to tell us the most about playoff contenders or pretenders? Because we have a pretty decent slate here.
Yeah, just looking down at the schedule, you're right. It is a great weekend. But the one that jumps off the page at me, and I know I'm bullish on the Mariners, but the Mariners and the Astros, to me, is very interesting. Among other series, too. I mean, it's sort of a pick 'em, right? I mean, you could easily you could throw the Marlins and the Dodgers in that category as well. But it seems like the Mariners and the Astros are, you know, they're kind of going at each other, same division. Can the Mariners, if they can make a statement, you know, maybe they could make that interesting and get closer to the Astros there and really solidify their chances, not only for postseason, but maybe even make a move in that division. You know, I don't know if they catch them or not, but that's a weekend series that I'm really paying attention to because of the pitching, and then looking at the matchup on who it's going to be. I mean, it might be a little early. I think we can probably look forward and see what the matchups would be, although it's probably subject to change. Nothing's been announced yet on the websites or by the organizations, but there's going to be some good pitching matchups.
Absolutely. And even if it's not a real make or break series for both teams, because the Astros have a little bit more of a solidified position in the playoff race, it's a great test for the Mariners. And Seattle, they've actually won 5 of the 7 meetings against Houston this year. And so they have a big 3-game set here, and then they'll face each other 3 games in Seattle during the last week of the season. Now, this is going to swing, obviously, with Seattle in the thick of the wild card race. This is also important for Houston, because we've been waiting for them to jump over the Rangers, and it's never come. So right now they are 3.5 games behind Texas in the American League West. Can they make a move to jump up? And as far as other series, there are some good candidates here. Dodgers and Marlins, which we've mentioned before. That's another case where it's a good test for Miami. LA a little more solidified in the playoff race, but two playoff contenders going at it. And as far as make or break goes, you have Boston and the Yankees hanging around on the wild card race. If this goes one way or the other as a sweep, it could be a nail in the coffin for either team.
Yeah, you've been hearing some critics saying, well, Boston, New York, it's been lacking some juice lately. Well, here you go. This is for you, because in many ways, this weekend series could be everything for the Yankees and the Red Sox, too. The Yankees need to be banking some wins here. And if this ends up going in a sweep either way, that you can kind of say for the Yankees, if they take three here from the Red Sox, maybe this is where they pick themselves up off the mat, or it could be the final nail, even if Boston perhaps wins two out of three or does pull off the sweep. But I am focusing on that Mariners Astros series. I don't think I think the Rangers are going to win the AL West. Yes, I do. But this Mariners team, we saw it last year. We've been seeing it here the last couple of weeks. I wouldn't doubt them. And if you take a look way down at the end of their schedule, final 10 games, 7 against Texas, and you have 3 more against Houston. Their final 7 games are all home as well in Seattle. So this series could go a long way in terms of just keeping them within shouting distance for, dare I say it, the AL West. I don't think it's over here. Not when you take a look at that schedule. So it's going to be a very intriguing series for the Mariners going up against the Astros this weekend. Let's see what they can do. Back to more Toe on the Slab in a second. I need to remind you that today's video is sponsored by DraftKings. It is the best place to get yourself closer to the action. DraftKings Sportsbook is offering all new customers $150 in bonus bets instantly. That's right. New customers who bet just $5 are going to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. If you're looking to take a swing at an even bigger payout, DraftKings has got you covered with same game parlays, where you can combine multiple bets from the same game into one big bet. If mobile sports betting's not yet available in your state, don't worry. You can still get in on the fun with DraftKings Daily Fantasy, where they offer cash prize contests for nearly every sport. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. New customers use promo code SLAB. That's S-L-A-B. You can bet $5 on any wager and get $150 in bonus bets instantly. That's promo code SLAB only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. Let's get into some Yankee talk, because we talked about the Yankees and Red Sox coming up in the Bronx this weekend. In Atlanta, they're just trying to avoid a sweep, in my opinion, at this point. And they have Luis Severino going in the middle game against the Braves here. And it has been a disastrous 2023. No way to sugarcoat it for Luis Severino. David, I got to pick a pitcher's mentality here. Is Luis Severino, I guess, fixable by having him continue to go out and start every 5 days? Like, I know they need innings from people at the moment. The rotation's in shambles due to injuries. But for Severino's well-being as a pitcher, is this the only way to get him fixed? Or is it borderline like pitching malpractice here?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's sort of bodies at this point. They need somebody they can run out there, you know, that's available. That's how short they are because of all the injuries they've had. And, we've seen opener strategies. We've seen kind of pseudo piggyback strategies with Luis Severino. I'm sure if they had another option, they'd probably try to give him a break right now and then get him out of there. Based on what he said himself, you know, his psyche has really suffered a blow. And when you hear pitchers in their post-game press conferences talking about, you know, he feels like he's the worst pitcher in the league. That's a red flag that, you know, somebody's having a crisis of confidence right now. Now, with all that being said, if I were in there, I would go to extreme measures with him in terms of, you know, wild adjustments, one side of the rubber to the other side of the rubber, try to find a different angle for your release point, hold the ball with two seams, show the hitter something different. Luis Severino's always been a power four-seam fastball pitcher. I'd like to see him grip the ball with the seams and just show it to some hitters. Maybe run one up and in on some right-handed batters just to show some different movement on his pitch. All things would be on the table with Luis Severino. I went through that in the year 2000 with the Yankees, where I had a face plant of a year. I mean, I was awful, worse than Severino is right now. And I tried everything. I actually went down to the minor leagues and tried a different windup, moved on the rubber all the way to the extreme third base side of the rubber to create different angles for my breaking ball. I think that's where we're at with Luis Severino. I'm not sure if he's got a, if that's going to happen with him, because he's call, still calling his own game. He's a very proud, very stubborn guy on the mound. You know, I'm not sure that he's trying enough right now in terms of extreme adjustments to try to give different looks and to try something else, because what's happening right now is not working.
It's really a matter of throwing everything at the wall to see what sticks, right? And as far as putting him out there every fifth day, they're up against it as far as other options. And it seems like every game that seems to be the last straw, something else happens. So July 30th, big rubber game, Sunday night baseball. You were there, Coney. And he gives up 7 runs in the first inning. You say, well, this has got to be the death knell. But then Domingo Herman goes on the restricted list a couple days later. And so then when that turn comes around, there he is taking the ball against the Astros. And he had another rocky first inning, which has been a trouble spot for him. He gives up 5 runs. And you say, oh, well, maybe this is it. Well, then 3 days later, Carlos Rodon goes on the IL with a hamstring strain. And say, okay, well, then when this turn comes up again, maybe try something different. Trying the opener, you're running out of options here. Try it. He only gives up 4 runs this time. And when you say, okay, is that it? Well, then 2 days after that, Nestor Cortes goes down. So, and now here we are with him in this big series against Atlanta, and he's taking the ball once again.
Yeah, the Yankees and Severino, they're in a tough situation here. The Yankees are in between a rock and a hard place, but just getting warm bodies in the rotation at the moment. They need to find people who can grab some innings. Severino is an option like that right now, just because of the situation that James just reeled off there. I just feel like Severino, you know, you hate seeing him in this position because he is such a competitor. And I always reference this, his desire to just be great is there, but it's something that makes him stand out to me since he broke into the majors with the Yankees. And part of the reason why I just classify him as a New York athlete. So for him to be in this condition here, you just wish he's going to be able to find his way to fight himself out of it. And part of me says, hey, the only way you're going to be able to do that is by continuing to go out there every day. You can't just stop. You can't just take a step away from it and thinking if you go back and, you know, everything's going to get better. But a breather could be in line in a normal circumstance, not the case right now. So much so that they have one of their best relievers getting stretched out to become a starting pitcher. And that's Michael King, guys. We all love him. Friend of the program, right? He's sat in David's chair for toeing the slab as a fill-in. The Yankees will be stretching him out into a starter. I don't think there's enough time for them to have him stretched out to 100 pitches per se with where we're at in the season. But overall, is stretching Michael King into a starting pitcher a good idea?
I'm all for it. I think, you know, at this point in the season, that there's not only a need for an opener strategy, but there's also sort of a, you can do two things at once. You can maybe find out about him and let him stretch it out. He has the desire. He wants to. He's got the repertoire of a starting pitcher. You know, why not? He's been healthy all season long. You can pitch for this year with an eye towards next year as well. So, yeah, I that would be something that I'd be very interested in to see how he does stretch out the rest of the way and still retain, you know, the ability to use him in big games. If you get on a run, you can adjust your strategy as you go. If the Yankees suddenly start winning games and look like they have a shot down the last couple of weeks, then you can adjust your strategy. But right now, I think a dual strategy is good. Play for this year, you know, but also with an eye towards next year. And Michael King could absolutely be a viable candidate for the starting rotation next year.
I find that so interesting, Coney. And I tend to think we'll leave well enough alone. He's been so valuable in the bullpen. He's been one of the more valuable relievers in the American League over the last couple of years that, all right, that's a find. You can lock him in and say, wow, this is really great multi-inning weapon in our bullpen. But he does have the multiple pitches, and you're not making a decision in mid-August of 2023 forever. So I do get that. And so even if I'm more inclined to leave him in the bullpen. You could always do this. And if you need him to go back, it's easy to go from starting back to relieving, but you can't go the other way too much. So you can stretch him out and see how it goes. And then you could always walk it back a little bit if you need to.
Yeah, I think the Yankees could be in a good spot in terms of whatever they want to do with King right here. Now is the time if you want to see what you have as a starter and being in that dual role. More of Michael King is never a bad thing, right?
He wants it too. There's something to be said for somebody who wants something so badly and has asked for it, has been a good soldier. You know what? Well, here you go. You know, let's see what you got. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. He's wanted it for a long time. So, if not now, then when?
That's a good spot as far as, a lot of criticism of the Yankees is, robotic managing and all this by the book stuff. Well, here's a case of the human factor, the feel factor, where you're rewarding a guy who's been really key for you and you want to do right by him.
What about how they employ the opener here? They don't have Rodon right now. They don't have Cortez. Severino's a big, question mark and borderline liability, if you want to call him that. But they have two young pitchers with Brito and Vasquez now in the rotation. And it just sounds like we saw it the first time through. It sounds like we're going to be seeing the opener attached to those two young pitchers for some time here, for the foreseeable future. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they let him start traditionally, but it doesn't seem like that. What are the pros and cons here for the Yankees seemingly being dead set on using an opener for Randy Vasquez and Johnny Brito?
Well, I think you have to have the personnel for an opener strategy, and I think the Yankees do. Now with Jonathan Loaisiga back in the back end of the bullpen, you've got Ian Hamilton, who's been just a tremendous story this year as a great opener and really likes to do it and has thrived so far in that role. So I'm all for it. You have young pitchers. You're trying to use every weapon at your disposal. Having Ian Hamilton throw the first couple of innings, not a bad way to go, and then follow him up with a rookie starter to try to get to the back end of the bullpen and hand the ball right to somebody like a Jonathan Loaisiga. So, yeah, I'm all for it. I don't see any problem at all with the strategy, based on the personnel that the Yankees have in place right now. A couple of rookie starters that had sketchy numbers in AAA but have done pretty well on the big league level in limited appearances. Why not help them out a little bit because of the weapon that you have in Ian Hamilton? So, yeah, because of the personnel, because of him in particular, Hamilton, I like the strategy.
I like it for Brito more than Vasquez. Maybe it's because I trust Vasquez a little more than Brito. But this is the kind of thing that you do for young pitchers like this when you're down into your beyond your starting pitcher depth. I mean, what are we up to now? The eighth starter, the ninth starter, the 10th starter. This is how you give these guys a softer landing. It's good for a young pitcher who might be trying to get fewer innings on the whole out of somebody. So a case in point, and Hamilton's been great with a 1.87 ERA this year. And you do have guys like Loaiza coming in. Keenan Middleton has also filled a good role in the bullpen so far. But so you look at Friday in Miami. Hamilton stays in for a second inning as the opener, and he gives up two runs. But you go to Vasquez in the third, and he pitches pretty well. Now, he only goes 3 2/3. Now, if you start a guy, you might be reticent to pull someone after 3 2/3, and you might leave him in to give up more runs. But if he's coming in for innings 3, 4, 5, 6, if you're in a pickle in the sixth inning, and Vasquez was with a 7-4 lead, tying run on deck, boom, you go to Jonathan Loaisiga. He gets out of the sixth. He goes the seventh. And then you go Canely home for 8 and 9. And the bullpen went 10 up, 10 down. It's an easier way to get those guys deeper into the game. And you still have several relievers towards the end where you can afford to use Ian Hamilton earlier in the game.
Yeah, I'm for it. I think with you, James, I want to see it with Brito more than Vasquez. It's essentially training wheels for young starting pitchers, and
yes,
aren't a bad thing, right? It's not a bad thing there. I think there's more raw stuff with Randy Vasquez. In a weird way, I had someone from the Yankees say they're kind of equal with how they view them with their stuff. The ceiling may be the same with them, but they feel Brito's floor is higher. It's a tough way for me to interpret it, but that's what it was. But yeah, look, they're young. The Yankees are in a unique spot right now. They're trying to get creative, and it's alleviating the load here, lightening the load for two young starters. So I'm for it at the moment, based on where the Yankees are at. If their situation changes, if they get closer in the standings, if they notice that while they're doing that, this is helping them, or it's, you know, a detriment, maybe they have to alter course. But at the moment, I think it's the best route to go here for the New York Yankees at the moment. Doesn't look pretty, though, overall. Things can change. This weekend, Mr. Cone goes to Washington, right, David? You have the Nationals and the Phillies on Sunday Night Baseball?
Yes, we do. We're, you know, at the Little League World Series, so we're going to be able to do Williamsport. And we're actually going to do one of the Little League games in the morning and then do the Nationals Phillies at night for Sunday Night Baseball. So it's a lot of fun. You go down there and watch the Little Leaguers, you can't help but get drawn back to your childhood and all your Little League memories. It's a wonderful scene there. It's like a Norman Rockwell painting, you know, Williamsport in that ballpark. It's just remarkable.
Now, I missed that. So you go to Little League, you don't go to DC. Awesome. You're going to be eating ice cream on the hill with some kids.
Yeah. I've never slid down the hill. You know, I had my hip replacement last July, so I couldn't do it last year. So I might have to, I don't know. We'll see. I remember seeing Baltimore was there last year and Felix Bautista, the Mountain, sliding down the hill on a cardboard cutout and kind of tripping at the end. And it looked like, oh, did he tweak his knee? I was like, oh no, don't let that happen. But you know, the Mountain going down a hill was quite a scene. Felix Bautista is a large human being.
You had the homer hose a couple of weeks ago. They have to have you get down the hill this weekend. I mean, you got to make great TV, man. That's what it's all about.
We'll see.
All right. Nationals, Phillies from Williamsport, Sunday Night Baseball. That's where you can catch David this week. That's going to do it for this episode, everybody. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel so you do not miss a single piece of footage that we are streaming each and every week. New episodes coming out Tuesday or Wednesday each week as well. For David Cohen, for James Smythe, and for our wonderful producer, Dan Bork, this is Justin Shackle. We will talk to you next week on Toe in the Slab, Pitching with David Cohen, a production of John Boy Media.